Yeah, it's indeed, but
our
it's kind of the same thing. You know, there's some techniques to go around it. Some of the Japanese ones used to do the same because their iron was like very soft compared to like European iron. So that's why they did something called like folding. They just forged it a lot longer and then folded the iron or the steel to make it, you know, stronger over time. You could probably do the same. It will take a lot more time, but at least the resulting swords will be suitable for battle.
Also, Euro coins are nickel-free because they do... a lot of people are allergic against nickels and they just
fucking Europeans. Save the planet.
So that's good too, because
last I checked, nickel allergy was not limited to Europe.
Yeah, but it's always the Europeans. Next thing you know, someone's going to have, you know, allergies to cotton-based toilet paper, so everyone's going to have to wipe their ass with silk in Europe.
Anyways,
gotta love it.
No, what we were saying was, if we were to make swords out of coins and stuff like that, my biggest worry would be like the density factor of, you know, how brittle it would be with the mixture of different elements and coins. Even if you took like quarters, I think quarters are mostly steel at this point. I gotta Google that really quick though to make sure. But yeah.
No, just call it 1,000 times. Call it Nippon steel, and then it can cut through anything.
As far as I know, steel is not really an alloy, but.
No, it's an alloy. It's a, well, doesn't have
to be. Carbon, something with carbon, I forgot about it, but.
Yeah, but it traditionally is an alloy.
Okay, but it's mostly
It's mostly a manufacturing technique nowadays, but it used to be an alloy.
Oh, wow, so apparently quarters are also mostly copper with just a bit of nickel in there.
Hmm.
And before 1965, in America, they were all made with silver. But that's become a more rare resource, so we can't afford to just put that in coins.
That and people were melting them down.
Yeah, I think it was earlier. It was important that the coins really have the value of whatever. So nowadays, I think they for every piece of money they print or press or whatever, they have to put something. Some gold or something other worthy into some safe. I don't know
Fort Knox. Yeah, works. So it's supposed to be like a dollar bill is equal to a dollar worth of gold, but it's kind of diminishing because they don't really do that anymore.
We got off the gold standard. Oh God.
Yep, we're no longer on the gold standard. We left the gold standard in. Shortly after the Great Depression, so that way the government now can print as much money as they want, based on the full faith and credit of the United States government. And apparently the world must really trust us because our currency is still worth quite a bit.
Well, it all comes down to our import-export values at this point, you know, what we produce for the rest of the world and the world economy. Actually focusing in on that, it would be... around 1965. Like I said, that's kind of when they started phasing out the silver so they could start collecting silver and actually using it in components like, you know, your smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. If a metal that's already expensive gets a use in technique, then it gets even more rare and more value. So
it's absolutely true. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So there's all these activists, you know, around the world that they protest mines and they protest, you know, trying to find like, you know, actually mining for metals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of ironic because they're sitting there, you know, on their smartphones and computers and laptops and whatever, you know, complaining to the internet about this, where most of the metals in your computer come from those mines. It's not like we're recycling them. We kind of need those in order to actually progress as a species.
It's all about balance and making electronics that can be recycled. Because too so much of our old stuff, they just it was difficult to recycle, and it's a very pollution-based method of recycling. So third world countries are where we end up sending our old phones to. So if we can clean that up, I think.
Well, it all comes down to, again, you can smelt it all out. Is you burn it and the plastics will basically evaporate, but then you have the carbon emissions problem. But you can actually get the metals to smelt down, and then chemical separators to, you know, take the aluminum in one direction and the gold in another direction, the copper in another direction, based off of their weight.
Think about how many electronic devices each one of us has already thrown away or recycled over the course of our lives, and multiply that by about, 6 billion people?
And also batteries are a huge problem in recycling.
Yeah, it's true. The other line is you can't smelt those because they just...
Yet the demand for batteries is going up exponentially, both, you know, anywhere from electric cars to just cell phones and whatnot. Though I think on the larger scale batteries, like the ones they use in electric cars, those are designed to be taken apart and recycled.
Lithium,
properly.
Yeah, anything
comes.
Involving lithium ion, so like your smartphone battery, those are made to actually so you can take the lithium ion out and then you can smelt it down and, you know, you oxygenate, well, you don't want to on your own, but so you'll pull the lithium out of the battery itself and then you can spread the metal that makes up the container of the battery, spread that out, let it oxygenate and allow it to, you know, the lithium to go away through natural processes, and it's I don't know. you can recycle it from there, and you have, you know, your lithium all stored in one area, and then you can smelt the metal back to what it needs to be.
Well, yeah, well, Fleeks is a chemist. He can probably explain it.
Yes, Fleeks, yeah, help me out here.
I just know if you open a lithium battery, you should do it outside because the lithium will burn when exposed to air.
Yep. If exposed to oxygen, kaboom. If exposed to water, bigger kaboom.
Yeah, right.
Exposed to excessive heat, kaboom. If you drop it hard enough, kaboom. Oh, it's a glorious thing.
There are a lot of chemicals that are actually doing that, but it's not that reactive, but it oxidizes fast, and if you put too much, especially water or the... humidity in the air, if that gets in contact with it, it will eventually burn. So don't open batteries.
Yeah, just it's a bad idea.
That's a fine advice.
A message from the Birdanian government.
This is episode 17 of Bird Life. If you can't tell already, it is the science podcast of birds and batteries and hopefully bird history pretty soon. I'm Core.
I'm Fleeks.
I'm that dude that chirps and has a cat.
And joining this week, we have...
Same.
Hey, Sane.
He's so enthusiastic to be here.
the sane one.
Or the insane.
Or the insane. Yes, yes, yes. Well, you got to be a little insane to join us. I mean,
indeed. I come prepared.
Ooh, oh boy.
Oh my.
Yeah, I saved the pun. With insane
for later, time. Okay.
Yes, yes, yes. And I came prepared by coming right after getting off of a rather annoying shift at work. So, woohoo, drinking with birds. What a great way to end the day.
Yeah, what are we drinking today, guys?
I'm just drinking water today for good reasons.
Oh, you okay. Health-conscious so you bird.
Did you party hard last night?
Nah.
Oh, okay. Good if happen.
I'm not in the mood for alcohol right now.
Okay. I'm drinking Polish beer. I was going to a Polish, I guess, delicacy shop, and they had like some Polish beers, and this one is Tyski. And also I brought some honey mead because I still had a bottle, and I don't know. I just thought I would drink honey mead.
Not bad.
Hmm.
Storm?
Honey mead is delicious. I am going to be trying my dragon's favorite beer today. It's called Rolling Rock. Never tried it before.
Sounds like it would be a dark beer.
No, it's actually clear. So this would be interesting.
Okay.
As for me,
never heard of Rolling Rock. Oh, sorry.
As for me, I'm drinking coffee, but with a little bit of Kahlua in it. You know, that nice little kick you need in the mornings to wake up and just have Saturday.
So you have coffee with coffee liqueur, so you could just have, like, put, I don't know, what can it, and it would probably taste the same, or is it a taste difference?
It pretty much tastes the same, except I have a peppermint Kahlua, so it's just got a little kick of mintiness to it. It's delightful.
I like mint and coffee. I like mint.
I am so jealous, Core, right now. Oh, my God, that sounds amazing.
Zane, I'm going to ask you the question that we always start off with our guests, so buckle up.
What is it?
I think he actually buckled up, guys. Wow.
I know. He's taking this far too fucking seriously.
How did you find the fandom?
So shoot. Oh, God.
And follow up, how did you become a bird?
I mean, it's not, you know, it's not exactly a bird, but like a bird-like species. I think it's like 10 or 15 years ago. It sometimes went into the fandom and sometimes like had long periods of breaks. The longest break I had like was almost 6 years. I don't know. I was in contact with a lot of friends, but I think essentially it started like 2003-ish. So it's a long time ago.
So you actually managed to escape the fandom and then you came back. Why?
I don't know. Just felt like getting back to some old contacts, and then I ended up here.
That works.
So not only did he come back, he came back bigger and chirpier than ever.
And fluffier. Also, daily preens.
He's super fluffy. Tell us why you're so fluffy.
Because I'm a fluffy Deinonychus. So it's like it's not kind of a bird, but a bird-like, I guess. It's a dromaeosaur, mostly referred to as a raptor of some kind. But it's, you know, it's a specific one. And it's a feral, so it's like just an animal type. And kind of tried to be scientifically accurate. So it has its features like feathers and pinnaceous feathers, proper wings. And it does preens all the time. Preening, very important.
As expressed by your Telegram sticker pack.
Indeed.
So I don't know if you realize how popular your sticker pack is, but like...
Okay.
Everybody I know has it. Like, honest to God.
What, like, is it nothing that? Just the preens?
Like, there are people in my local, like, community that have somehow come across your sticker pack and use it. It's just too damn cute.
Okay. Yeah, it's fluffy. You gotta contribute to the fluffiness.
I've gotta find this pack now. It sounds very, very amusing.
Yeah, it's a cute pack.
It says you know, it has fluffs, it has nibs of all sorts, it has feathers all around.
And beer. Yeah, it has beer and sushi.
Oh yeah, of course, and the beer. Actually, I have like some more. I need to do some beer related stickers or images. I need to turn into stickers at some point.
It's all.
How did you come across or come about creating your bird sona? You know, why did you pick this type of bird, the features? You know, give us the details.
Okay, so I guess it started with the love for birds in general and its resemblance to dinosaurs. Back when I was, like, really small, I always loved both animals like the birds and the prehistoric dinosaurs. And always the feet kind of reminded me that they had to be somewhat related, right? If you look at the dinosaur feet in itself, like you can see the resemblance, even though you don't know or read anything up about its relationships. So in a way, I kind of always assumed that they would be somewhat related, and I always liked the proportions of the Deinonychus. And I just decided that it would be like a perfect fit. Like it has really nice proportions for its wings and tails and appendages in general compared to like most other dromaeosaurs. It's very robust. And I don't know, it's very fluffy. If you make it fluffy.
If you make it fluffy. Yeah. It's theorized to be fluffy. Fluff.
What I want to ask you, we invited you to the podcast today, not only because you're a cool person, but also because of because you're working in science, right?
Somewhat. My day job is just computer science, but I have strong interest in all sorts of evolutionary theories of ornithology, of paleontology, and just very enthusiastic about these topics. And I like talking about them with people that have equal interest.
So you're a hobby bird nerd.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
All right. I have a question for you, and this is probably the most important question of my life. So I'm kind of I'm hanging on the edge for like an answer here. So it's theorized that T-Rexes, you know, evolved into chickens, right?
No.
No, it's not thought that anymore, or?
It's not that a T-Rex or like any Tyrannosaurus eventually evolved into chicken, because the Tyrannosaur lineage of animals kind of died out.
Okay.
It's the common ancestors of chicken and Tyrannosaurus that are still alive, which are chickens, I guess, and all modern birds, because they like very related to each other.
Okay, then I have a follow-up question before I ask the... Well, I guess this isn't a follow-up. I have a preamble question.
Oh.
So, KT extinction event. All dinosaurs are gone. How is there still a lineage? Was that?
It's a complicated, because it's not that dinosaurs died out. It's that non-avian dinosaurs died.
Okay.
And also, the extinction event itself didn't kind of kill all the non-avian dinosaurs. It was a progressive period over multiple years, maybe sometimes even like millions of years, that some tiny populations of even non-avian dinosaurs survived the impact but struggled to survive over time. So they eventually died out, and the avian dinosaurs were the only like surviving ancestors, and they're still alive today. So in a way, you can say that since birds are dinosaurs, that dinosaurs never died out, they're still alive.
Fair enough. That actually answers, because I was just going to ask, how does the lineage work from the linking of dinosaurs to birds, modern birds? So that answers that part. Question number two is, if chickens are theorized to be the most closely related bird to the T-Rex, again, it's up in the air, what would you think corvids came from?
That's a multi-part question. In all, you need to like kind of define what exactly is a bird, because if you just say that birds are like the modern birts, so the new Aves clade, then any modern bird is like the same closely related to a T-Rex as any other bird, because they all come from the same common ancestor, which is related to a T-Rex in some way, but not directly.
Okay, so
depending on what the bird is.
We're talking about common ancestry here. We have the raptors. We have, the T-Rex. I don't really remember what classification they fall under. And the ones that, kind of became avians through that ancestry. So what you're basically telling me is there's no way we can ever know what corvids came from?
if you really want to know, like, there is a... And not what they came from, but kind of the relationships between other birds. There has been like a conducted research, a genomic analysis. I think it was Jarvis in 2014. So like what now, like 3 years ago, which kind of resolved some early branches of the tree of life. And maybe there you can look where the COVID length or the COVID tree kind of goes back into, but you would be surprised that there's a lot of more inclusive groups as you go back in time.
Okay, what was this project called? Jarvis?
No, just a genome analysis. I can probably link you the paper after this. I have it if you want it. I can also send it over. It's a very kind of, it's one of the biggest genomic analyses.
Please definitely do. I'd love to read that.
Oh, yeah.
And going from this same, going from to the same, like, it's also, this research also strengthened the relationship between, okay, I guess maybe I should start with a question. Like, what do you think are falcons closely related to? Like, falcons and hawks look the same, right?
Right.
Like, they have similar traits. Yeah, they're very similar.
So they would be part of the raptor family? Would that be a direct...
Raptor is a very generic term. So we usually should talk like cladistics here, but raptor is like very common, and it's everyone can define it differently. And in the classical sense, raptors always included like the birds of prey, which includes the falcons and hawks and eagles and whatnot. But the genomic research, I mean, usually people would see falcons and hawks and kind of see that they're very closely related, well, kind of have to be, because they have like traits that both share and they look very close, you know, closely related. But in fact, what is interesting is that falcons and like, or otherwise, like parrots and falcons are more closely related than falcons are to hawks. Which is interesting.
Yeah, one eats berries and fruits and nuts, and the other one actually kills other birds.
Indeed. So this is one of the prime examples for convergent evolution, which is like the theory that unrelated distinct species could evolve similar traits independently throughout the course of history, evolution. So that the common ancestor of falcons and hawks did not necessarily need to be predatory. Actually, most likely didn't. So they evolved all the predatory traits, like the beak, curvature in beaks, and all the predatory traits independently. So the common ancestor did not do that. So that's interesting. And yeah, they're more closely related to parrots, the falcons.
I can think of at least one parrot who's going to be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he has more parrots in the crew now.
Yeah, there seems to have been an explosion of parrots recently, that's for sure.
Just so many colorful plumages and feathers just everywhere. Just
Does anyone keep track of the amount of parrots we have and the population is increasing?
You know, that may actually be a good idea to run a poll in the crew itself and, you know, find classifications, like specific species. We'll just throw griffins under the category of other.
No. You can't just throw me under the category of other or my species in general. We're clearly a very special and unique trait.
Too late. Already doing it.
Special.
Yes. So how would the biology of a griffin actually work if science could allow it?
Then we have to define what exactly is a griffin first, because in every people, like in everyone's mind, like if they hear griffin, they probably would describe it differently or define it differently. And in order to give it a scientific declaration or like even a phylogenetic analysis, whether they would fit in a cladogram or whatever, like we need to define what exactly is a griffin.
So 50% cat, 50% bird would be seemingly the common.
But that's biological, not a good. That's not a good. First to say, a mammal and avian doesn't go together. You know, they're two different branches. So either the cat butt or the bird head has to be an how's it called? Has to be analog.
Well, I mean. If we go so we have part mammal and part bird. So if we go back to bird and mammals, there's Sauropsidia and Synapsidia, and the common ancestor for both of these would probably be the amniotes. So like a group of animals that laid eggs. It's a very basal group. So they, we can probably safely assume that griffins would be amniotes if they lay eggs. It's like a even a better like trade to go back to. And but from amniotes to either like Sorobcidia or Sorobcidia, that's like just rolling a die. So maybe they would spawn like a third major blade that kind of composes both, because then I guess it also falls down to, is it a bird with mammal features or is it a mammal with bird features? So that the other half, yeah, we could just say is a part of, again, congruent evolution.
Yeah,
that's, I would say, I would say maybe since the lower body is mammal and the upper body where the brain is more bird, I would probably have to say it's a bird that happens to have mammal features on its ass.
Okay, so then if the lower half, the mammalian half, still is capable of laying eggs, then it's a mammal that lays eggs, right? Which includes platypus and echidna.
Yeah, but you but have then, to take into consideration that platypus are not related to birds. So
indeed, yeah. So the monotremes is actually a mammalian group or clade, so that means that they're closely related to mammals because they are mammals than to birds. So that would mean if they were monotremes, then the griffins would be mammals with bird traits rather than birds with mammal traits.
Oh, this makes me so happy. So basically, what you're telling me right now is Storm is actually more closely related to an echidna than actual birds.
If you define it that way, then yeah.
Well, but maybe, maybe a griffin is an endosymbiosis between a cat and a... And a bird, like they merge somewhere, and that would explain the third
scientifically.
That makes sense.
What the hell? Weed are you smoking?
Well, that would mean that he's like a mammal with avian parts, right?
Exactly.
So that's why.
The wings have to be secondary then.
Yes. So another thing that I've always been curious about griffins, the same thing happened to like dragons and wyverns, that there's like the wyverns that only have like a like quadruped or have like four kinds of appendages. Are like any equivalents of griffins with only like four appendages similar to wyverns? Because I've never seen these and I wonder. Because I've only seen...
There are some. The one thing I've noticed about griffins... I still call them griffins. The thing about griffins that I've noticed is there's a lot of variety. And yeah, which you makes have it some that have, yes, you have some that have tail feathers. You have some that have, you know, more lion-like tails. You have some that have feather, you know, like tail feathers higher up right off their butt, plus a tail that's a lion-like that goes all the way to the end. It's just lots of variety. Some have talons up front, some have talons at the back. The one thing about griffins is there's no consistency, aside from the very general premise of the upper body is some kind of bird or eagle. The rear is some kind of generally feline, but I've seen a rear griffin that was actually a dog once.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, we actually do have a lupogriff in chat with us, Guinevere Griffin.
And also we have some reverse griffins with bird butts.
Yeah, but those are just sparkle dogs.
Yeah.
Actually, those aren't called griffins. There's a name for that.
Sparkle dogs.
When they're completely inverted like that, there actually is a fantasy creature classification for that.
An inverted griffin.
See, I'm just picturing a griffin that's been flipped inside out when we say inverted griffin.
Oh.
It's a very disgusting mental image.
Thank you very
don't
much.
Don't call it reverse griffin, reverse
yeah.
griffin.
No, that just sounds like a sexual position. The reverse what? Griffin.
We went there.
Really? Yes. Oh, the reverse yeah, of course. Of course.
Another interesting question. Would a griffin with, like a normal griffin, like I don't know what to call a normal griffin, but a griffin with a avian... four part and a like feline or whatever else part in the bag be compatible with an inverse griffin? Like, are they would they be capable of producing offspring?
That's a great question. If I would say yeah. just like a griffin could technically, I would think, breed with a horse to make a hippogriff. And also, I would say a griffin probably could, if their rear half is feline, breed with a feline. A griffin breeding with a straight bird would be an amusing sight, but I'm not sure the cloaca would stretch that wide. But hey,
the ostriches would work, maybe.
Well, my ongoing joke with griffins is they're the byproduct of what happens when a cat plays with its food, and hippogriffs are a byproduct of when griffins play with their food. So, technically, because they're all kind of in fantasy land, they're all able to kind of, you know, intermingle like that. I'm sure there are definitely half griffin, half cats. So, you know, little tiny cats with itty bitty wings, or the inverse of that. Griffins that bred with regular birds and made griffins or birds with cat whiskers and a cat tail? I don't know.
Well, if there's this much variety within griffins themselves, one can only begin to assume how much variety there is in cross pairings. And just separating from griffins and speaking in general, when you think about, you know, bird combinations or furry combinations across species, within a matter of years, pretty much, like, if every fur today, just speaking of furs for in general, got it on with someone else they were compatible with, but of a different species, within just a few years, we'd be nothing but hybrids.
Oh, no, it's completely true. Keep the species pure. No, I'm not like that.
So would griffins be actually different species, or would it be similar to how dogs? It's like one species, but different, like, breeds.
I think it would be similar to canines in that you would have griffin as a general term, but then you'd have subsects.
Eastern griffins, North European griffins, shepherd griffins.
Perfect griffins, asshole griffins, war, you know, all this stuff. It would be great. And there are, Score, much to your satisfaction, there are raven-based griffins. So, you know,
that doesn't satisfy me at all. That just breaks up Corvidae as a species in general.
I have a griffin character.
But it's
too.
Not that griffin's fault that its parents made the mistake. So they have to, you still have to love them. You still have to, again, it's not their fault. They were born into this world.
At least, hey, there's a reason that people love platypuses. Can I say?
Platypi?
Yeah, they're loved. They like to watch them. They've got more protections.
You can't hug them, at least during breeding season, because they can stab you and poison you.
Yes, that is true.
Actually, they do not stab you.
They're very gentle.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. They actually do not like sting you or something. They just have a poison glands underneath their... How is it called, the body part? Give me a second. Underneath the armpits. Underneath the armpits, they have poisonous glands, and only the males, and only while they're breeding.
So yeah, but basically, the moral of this story is this little tangent is: don't hug horny male platypi.
Yeah, that wouldn't be very.
That's the title of my autobiography.
But you are welcome to hug horny male griffins whenever you like.
Oh, boy.
That's the subtitle of my autobiography.
The subtitle?
The subtitle.
Really? Wow.
Oh, man.
And coming soon from, you know, Storm Griffin Productions, why you should never trust purple ravens. A real life true story.
I think you can always trust them. They never lied to me so far. And also, we should talk about the science behind cheetos and ravens.
The science cheetos? Behind
cheetos There's... and ravens.
I don't understand your obsession with this.
Cheetos. It's... What?
Yeah.
I don't think Zane's really been present in chat during those times.
Oh boy, what is it? Are we talking about the same cheetos?
The Cheetos, yeah, the food.
What, Ravens have like a hard-on for Cheetos or something?
Storm, no. Are you not aware of this either?
No, I missed the connection.
How? How are you not?
At least we too. Oh, my God. What is it? Tell me. What is it about?
Okay, so I have... We were talking about how, like, Fursona, like, a lot of people's, like, Fursonas have magical abilities or whatever. So, yeah. Canon to Core's magical abilities is he has three. He has one, he carries a cannon that, a transmutation cannon that can turn any non-species of bird into bird. Second of all is he has the ability to... replace himself with a substitute, like the Pokemon move, at the cost of half of his health in order to be able to flee away from a threat. And the third special ability is Core can teleport to anywhere there is a Cheeto currently present.
Yeah, it's very complicated. Raven quantum mechanics.
So, what? What?
Storm, you need to be more active in chat if you want to ask questions like this.
Well, I'm in chat. I talk to you, mother cluckers, almost every day.
This has been like
room.
The past 3 days. Fleeks has been obsessing over this, trying to figure out the science of like me and Cheetos.
But it's an insider since
I know why there's. I know why Core can transport. I know why Core can transport to anywhere there's a Cheeto. It's because every Cheeto is made with a little bit of Raven blood. There you go.
No. There's no black magic involved in this.
I read the ingredients. I did not read about Raven Blood, but it was one of my first series, too.
Yeah, it would never pass through the FDA if there was actual animal blood in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you say so, Cor.
Okay. I do.
For all we know. You could have food ingredients flowing through your blood. We don't know.
I probably do. If I eat, yeah, I've probably got some trace amounts of nutrient floating through me. It's how biology works.
So your regular diet consists of one Cheeto a day, keeps the Core away?
No. I actually don't really even like Cheetos all that much, to be honest with you. Occasionally I'll have like a craving for them, but like I don't. Yeah, they're Cheetos. They're super greasy.
That's part of how you lure mates in. You leave a trail of Cheeto crumbs all the way to your cloaca and like, come at me,
oh
baby.
Oh,
what the hell, man?
What the hell,
okay,
man?
Okay, let's get back on topic here. Okay. Zane, I've got
I'm
some...
perplexed.
Zane, I got more questions for you.
I just wanted to share like my ability card, if I can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Visit it in Discord. Okay, here.
He has an actual picture.
Yeah, someone made it for me. So
that's like, adorable.
Was kind of...
You made.
Okay. What we're
Nibble
seeing
Mom.
Here...
Nibble Mom.
What we are seeing here right now is a card from the Pokemon trading game, card game. And it has a picture of Xayn's Sona on it. And it's a basic Pokemon with 100 HP.
Oh, he doesn't like fire.
The ability.
No, I'm very like fire. Just makes feathers go bye-bye. And
yeah, that makes sense.
Very susceptible to fire.
It's true.
But you
have two abilities.
You have a resistance to earth, and your abilities are Nibble Nom with a worth of 10. I never played the game. I don't know how exactly
it's
works.
10 damage.
Also, you have an ability called Fluff, and it involves flipping a coin. And if it hits you during your opponent's next turn, you prevent all effects of the attack, including damage done to Xayn. And if it tails, Butt Fluff intensifies.
Oh, jeez.
That's very useful.
Yeah, it just poofs up uncontrollably.
Just uncontrolled amounts of Butt Fluff poop. Okay.
Yep.
Winning the game with Butt Fluff.
Indeed.
If someone, like, if I can imagine someone at the heat of a battle, it's like the grand finale, you're watching this live on TV, and someone whips out this card and throws off the Butt Fluff attack. Oh my gosh. And then if they win with that attack, it'll be the fluffiest win ever. I mean, wow.
Yeah. That's how I like to win.
You're not wrong. If you can win with fluff.
Yep. Feather's the best.
So yeah. I did also want to ask, you established that you're computer science major, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a minor in paleontology, ornithology, or...
No, not really. It's something I want to do at some point because you know, I've gained a lot of interest, like in knowledge that I might pursue some, you know, just certification. But at this point, the only major that I have is computer science.
Okay,
yeah, and take in consideration that we are not really have that the European or German system is a bit different.
It's different. We don't have like minors in the classical sense that it is in the US.
Gotcha. Okay. Second question is, and if you want to talk about this, how did you get involved in the Saurian project?
I've been there pretty much from day one. My friends and teammates have been friends since 2012, and we always talked about being kind of disappointed how the media treats the image of dinosaurs. And back then, most of us were at the forums of what was the game called? It's like some dinosaur game that was very popular on Steam.
Turok. The name.
It's kind of. No. It's an indie game.
Oh no! Hang on. If I get Steam pulled up, have it. Orion most Prelude.
No. It's a bit 2012. Think 2012. It was very popular and still is being played. But yeah, anyway. So that was like where we met each other, and primarily, and we talked about you know ideas of what a game with a proper, an image of dinosaurs and how they lived, and especially their visual appearance, would kind of how one would look like and design one. But back then, it was only like talking about the possibility, but we never talked about actually doing it. And at the end of 2012 or like beginning of 2013, we kind of went together with Jake, one of the 3D artists that we have. And, you know, it's kind of mingled about because he was doing 3D art on DeviantArt.
Okay.
And we kind of approached him, and he was like, "Yeah, sure, why not? Like, you know, do just some models and see where it goes from there." And then, kind of, eventually, we get together, and then we joined a older project called Project Trinosaurus, which was like a team that tried to do a dinosaur themed game. It's actually, well, we came to that later, but that project is still alive under a different name and different team. But and then from that one, we kind of split. I think I was mid-13 or beginning of 14. I don't know. Don't remember. But essentially, like, we had different idea of what to do with the dinosaur game because Project Trinosaurus was supposed to be like a kind of game where you're still playing a human in a world that isn't defined by any, like, scientific borders. It's just a free-roaming, just add whatever kind of game, Ark, I guess. And we wanted it to be like based on a specific formation with its biota as it has been in the past, like the actual biota with all the animals and plant life and everything recreated as closely as possible to our current knowledge. So we split and made our own team from that one, and this evolved to Saurian basically. And it's called Saurian Hell Creek with a subtitle, but we still haven't decided whether to use that subtitle or not. But and the subtitle is actually the name of the formation that we chose, the Hell Creek Formation, which is a paleogeographic formation like 66 million years ago. It's like Upper Cretaceous, pretty much the border of the Mesozoic Paleogene border, which is very closely to the, or like it still survived after the Chicxulub impact.
So
Sorry,
the purpose of Saurian is to actually remain as scientifically feasible for that era as possible, right?
Yeah, that was still like our first priority, and it still is. And even if like late in the development, something like a new paper comes out or like a new discovery or whatever, and that forces us to like change things, like major aspects of the game, we definitely would, because being as scientifically accurate as possible is our like primary goal. Because there's so many other projects try to be everything else, and they kind of mingle with like some sort of science, but they kind of like fudge the image of the animals and the locations they kind of explore. And there's always a kind of bugged us, and we wanted to be like, you know, not, I wouldn't say like the first project, but kind of like, you know, a project that primarily does exactly that, like try to be as scientifically accurate as possible.
So what's the purpose of the game going to be then? You know, you just go exploring and that's it, or?
No, so, you know, first off, I probably have to describe. So yeah, it's the goal is to shape the public's perception of dinosaurs, which is, like, you know, often like heavily influenced by the popular culture, of course. But gameplay wise, it's supposed to be like an open world survival game in the sort, but it's not in the classical sense, like in most other games on Steam that, you know, kind of fall on the same label.
Okay.
Because ours kind of, it's actually, there's like more, like a heavy part of it is like the actual simulation. So we're currently, like, the animals themselves are like fully simulated. It's not just like in most survival games, you have like the standard bars of hunger, like, what is it, stamina and thirst or whatever. And they're like just bars and representing numbers. They go up and down, but they don't really mean anything.
Right.
And in Saurian, like, all the animals are like properly simulated. They have like internals, they have organs that are simulated. So that the whole physiology is being mapped to the code, so that like the energy or the stamina comes from, like, from is dependent on so many factors. Like, it goes down to, like, food actually needs time to process and be converted into nutrients, which convert it into energy, which then converts into stamina. And you have like so many pools of values that actually, you know, just feel more natural in a way. And it's, nothing is like just fudged. Like, of course, we have to fudge like some numbers, because, you know, we don't have any exact numbers of how the physiology sure. works of these dinosaurs. But most of, like, everything's at least tried to be simulated in a way.
So it's more of, instead of, you know, eating a steak or whatever out of the video game and your health instantly goes up, it's more like it's you still have to wait a period of time and then it starts to go up, or
it kind of, like, internally it would properly digest the food, and depending on what you eat and how much your ingestive system can deal with the food you're eating, then all the mass, like, even if you eat like just something that you normally wouldn't digest, like you can eat almost anything in the game, you would just fill up your stomach and not feel hungry anymore. But out of that that you have in your stomach wouldn't generate much or at all, like, energy, because most of it can't be digested. Then you get sick, whatever. Like, everything that you do kind of affects a system.
So you'd have to worry about, like, protein intake and whether this creature has, like, you know, venom or something like that.
Venom, not like, yeah, but in general, like, just you need to eat the right things, I guess. And they take time because they get actually processed in the digestive system. So you don't get stamina or, like, energy instantly when you eat something.
So it's like really a simulator that,
yeah, it's more a simulator than anything else, but it probably falls under the popular category open world survival game, but it's actually trying to be very different from the standard games that you see on Steam.
Is there a way to win the game, or you just can play it infinitely?
I mean, eventually you would die, of course, right? So at the end, you go through all stages of ontogeny. Ontogeny meaning, like, you know, the stages of like all the changes you go through in the development of an organism. So like from its birth, reaching its mature form, and eventually you die out of old age. But actually going through the old age is very difficult, right? So you see that even in the old games, like, actually reaching mature form was very difficult. So you likely wouldn't do that in the first few playthroughs. So that's actually your goal, just reach its mature form.
Are you like taking over whatever you're breeding, or
no,
do you only play one? Okay.
Yeah, you only play one currently, at least. And you go from, like, not hatching state, but from a juvenile stage up to the matured form. But yeah, reaching this adulthood would be probably very difficult. Initially, maybe it's a bit simplified, but over time, like, when all these systems that we have in place for the hardcore simulation are like going live, then it will be quite difficult to reach. Because it's like, so you think standard survival game, like you have a normal health pool, right? So when you take damage, you just take damage and the bar goes down. But in this game, like since every body part has its own like systems, depending on the amount of damage, and if you receive heavy damage over time, then you get into a bleeding state. And if the damage or like the injury is critical, then it will probably not be able to recover over time. And as such, you know, it's just not a bar going up and recover yourself. It's just damage that you probably can't heal. And eventually, like, you have, like, if it's a tail, probably not as important, but if it's a leg or like some sort of important body part, then you will probably see like some suffering and locomotion or like eventually die from the injuries.
So it's
just perceiving one fatal
kind of
injury.
Like a hardcore mode in a game, like, I guess, just to draw a relation, Minecraft, where when you die, you're pretty much dead. You lose everything. You have to start over.
It's not about the dying part as much as it is how you get to the dying part, because you have like any amount of damage that you receive is, I wouldn't say permanent, but it leaves at least scars that are permanent. And if you get critical injuries, they might eventually lead to death at a later point.
It sounds like this is a very unique mechanic that actually has not been put into games as of yet. Like, there have been attempts to put like this kind of an element in games, but not to the level that you guys are actually developing around, which is really cool.
Yeah, and we're designing it around this, I guess you could call it like hardcore simulated version, but eventually, since, you know, most people probably have a difficult time getting through this, but this is like how we design it first, and eventually we might have it like a bit easier time, like an easier mode, like at least giving the player more visual feedback in terms of like HUDs, because initially we don't want to see any HUD, so the only way of seeing damage or like your amount of health or whatever is just by its visuals, by its animation, by its, you know, whatever you have, you know, where you have like scars or injuries physically visible on your body. And the same happens to like the any dinosaurs or animals you see in the map. You know, like they don't have health bars over their head. You have to kind of, it's almost like in Monster Hunter where you have to see and judge the animal by its animations and by its behavior.
Are you playing the game from first person perspective or third person?
No, it's a third person. It's kind of over the head. We thought about first person, but it's kind of difficult in a way, because in first person games, most likely you play a human and you have like a very like vertical aligned body, right? But in a dinosaur, it's very horizontally aligned. So having a first person is kind of difficult to do.
Also, I generally like to see my critters.
It's kind of important because you need to look at, you know, parts of your body and see if you have injuries. So it would kind of make it impossible to judge what you'd received and where you are.
Kind of like worrying whether, oh, I'm bleeding out a little bit, but it's just like a little bit of blood versus, oh God, that's an artery kind of thing.
Tis but a scratch.
Is there a site or a place that listeners can go and check out the Saurian Project?
It's sauriangame.com, and it's at sauriangame on Twitter, and I think it's sauriangame on Tumblr as well, and Facebook. We have everything. But your main point is probably like sauriangame, just one word, .com.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you. All right.
Thank you for that insight.
Yeah.
So I've got a question for you, Zane. You said that you're a computer engineer. It's what you got a degree in. So
indeed.
I know you're working on this game project, but at work, are you using your skills as to become a programmer? Or what sort of things do you do using your education? Computer engineer is such a broad... In general, because a computer engineer is a very broad term.
I'm just a software engineer by, you know, on just what I learned for work, and it's just what I probably do like for a living. But Fusorian, I'm just doing whatever, like everything ranging from software development to design to to like science, like everything, everyone, because we're like a small team, so everyone does whatever he can do to contribute. But okay. Yeah, I'm just a trained software developer.
Okay, software developer. Yep. It's a very fancy title, but that's a very complicated job too. It really is. It's an art form.
Yeah, it's odd and it's fun.
Yep.
I've got a game for you guys.
Oh, yeah!
Zane, I don't think you're familiar. I don't think Zane is familiar with this game, though. If he's only listened to the most recent episodes, we have a tradition on the show where anytime we have a guest, I play a game called Bug, Bird, or Bluff. And let me tell you, it is Storm's favorite game to play in downtime.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
All right, so
what is it about?
What it is I'm going to list off three things. One is a bug, one is a bird, and one I have made up completely and is none of the above. It is your job to pick which one is which and figure out which one is which. I'll start with Fleeks so that you kind of get a bit of an idea, and then we'll do you, and then we'll do Storm, okay?
Okay, sure.
Okay. I my body is ready.
Your body's ready.
Of the two things that need to be ready, your body being ready is not the most important.
Maybe, but in a way, it is. Okay. Fleeks, Osiris, Cormorant, Nyctemera.
Well, I could. Okay.
No interrupting. This is up to him.
Wait, the first one was Osiris?
Osiris?
The second one was what?
Cormorant. Nyctemera.
Okay. The cormorant is a bird.
Correct.
And Osiris is a fake.
Correct.
And the last one is a bug.
Correct.
Yeah.
I did not understand the last one, but Osiris sounds like more a goddess or something from mythology or something. I know cormorants. As a cormorant, it's the same word in... I think it's a vulture, a cormorant, right?
No, it is not a. It's
it's a long-necked bird, right?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
The interesting point about cormorants is that the feathers, they don't get wet in the classical sense. So, if you would put a cormorant and any other bird into the water, right, the cormorant would probably be the lightest one because the feathers are designed as such that it repels water.
So the feathers are more hydrophobic than even normal feathers.
Yeah, indeed. Hydrophobic, that's exactly the word. Yeah, indeed.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's an interesting part of a cormorant as well. And they have like beautiful black iridescent plumage.
Okay, yeah. So
okay,
do you understand the premise of the game here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, do you think you're ready?
I'm always ready.
Okay, Zane's ready. Tarako, Manduka.
Okay.
Okolos.
Okay, so Tarako is a bird. That is an easy one. And then the second, like the last two, haven't again.
Manduka and Okolos.
Okay. Jesus, so that's a 50. I'm not versed in bugs, sadly. I would say the last one is a bug.
Almost. Okay, so Tarako, yes, bird, good job.
Yeah,
Manduka, bug. Okolos is a video game.
Oh, okay.
I thought the first one for Fleeks, the Osiris thing, Osiris. I thought it was reminded me of a damn, you know, one of those teenage pop singers.
No, that one was a video game as well.
Similar to Miley Cyrus.
What? Osiris is actually an Egyptian. Oh, okay. So it's just
the game. It's. But yeah, there's. I'm. Yeah. Anyways,
because I was thinking the Egyptian. Okay. Yeah, the Turco is actually really cute. And have you seen the movie Zambezia?
I have not.
Okay, that's never a bird movie. I have so many bird movies you have probably never heard about. We need to like watch them at some point. And Zambezia is one of the bird movies where you can really easily ID the birds. And I had so many Turacos. It's playing in the South African.
Oh, cool. So
many Turacos. Me and my friend, we watched it together. And we tried to ID like all the birds that we saw. And at some point, we had to stop because there's so many birds. And they're actually designed in a way, not like in most movies where just blobs of color. But you could actually really, not easily, but you can at least ID what kind of species they are, and it's really fun. So it's a good drinking game if you kind of want to, and you're still capable of IDing birds while you're drunk.
I wonder how many different kinds of birds did Birdemic the movie have?
Seagulls, basically.
Three.
I'm thinking it was like three or four, and they just kept using them over and over.
Okay, Storm, it is your turn. Don't think you can wiggle out of this one, buddy. No changing the subject on me.
Ooh.
Yeah, you thought you could wiggle out of it by changing the subject. And not happening. Okay, Storm. Anhinga, Terraria, Cotesia.
This actually also,
I saw the scheme. I get the scheme.
Seriously?
Yeah, and
it's easy, come on.
Anhinga, Terraria, Cotesia.
I don't have a clue.
Oh.
Say it again, because you won't ever text them to me, so I've got to listen.
Anhinga, Terraria.
Terraria.
Cotesia.
Cotesia. Okay.
Try to find the fake first. It's so obvious. If you have listened.
No, it's not. It's clicking for me. I don't have a clue. Let's see. The first one on Hingia, then Terraria. I don't know. Something about the middle one sounds wrong. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The middle one just sounds wrong. So, okay. The middle one a bluff?
Middle one is a bluff. Terraria is also a video game.
Okay. So then we have Anhingia, and what the hell was the last one?
Cotesia.
Anhingia and Cotesia. Bird and Bug?
Yep.
Correct. Storm, you got 100%.
Hey, hey.
And the Anhingia is actually a comment, and it's usually the one bird that you would do the comparison that I just did, that the Anhingia and both... Cormorant would go, like, because they're both like near the water and semi-aquatic animals, or like they prey on aquatic animals. If the Anhinga does not have the feather, like the water resistance, so the Anhinga would not be able to at least fly immediately after being indulged in the water, because they would get super heavy.
So they would just soak up water. They're basically the sponges of the avian world.
Yeah, kind of, but they would soak.
Yeah, leave it to Core to, you know, leave the hardest ones for me. That's always what he does.
Those were the easiest ones.
Related, yeah, they were kind of related to the Cormorant. So if you knew the Cormorant, you probably know the Anhinga.
You know, Zane's was a little harder, but mine was like, what the fuck?
I was seriously aiming the easiest one for you, because we were talking about Anhingas in chat the other day, and Terraria is a really popular video game, and then Cotesia I just figured would be the obvious bug of that.
Well, Cor, it's just proof. It goes to show that I think... like.
Also, why are you complaining? Why are you complaining, Storm? You got it 100%.
Exactly. Okay.
Because I'm a griffin. That's
Please.
Why.
Did you have any other games for us?
I actually wanted to do that one question I posted in chat. I want to try to answer it with you.
Okay.
And that's from Blake. He asked us, why is it theoretically impossible to travel faster than the speed of light?
If you're talking linear travel, yeah, it's theoretically impossible.
It's theoretically impossible, but why?
So the only theorized way to actually travel faster than the speed of light is through, I guess, basically wormholes would be the best way to put it.
Wormholes.
I don't know if anybody else...
But there's no guarantee that you would reassemble correctly on the other side.
No, that's not how wormholes work. So basically, picture life as a flat piece of paper, and draw an X on one part of that paper, and an O on the far side of the paper. Draw a line between the X and the O. That would be linear travel. That would be how you would get from point A to point B, and currently there's no way that we can even... fathom how to travel from point A to point B at the speed of at or faster than the speed of light right now. But
yeah, it's not possible.
With the theory of wormholes, what you do is you take your finger and you set it on that X that you drew, and you take your other finger and you set it on that O that you drew, and then you pinch the paper together so that the X and the O are now touching. That's the whole wormhole thing. You literally just walk across one side of the plane to the other without touching anywhere in between.
Theoretically, it's a shortcut. A wormhole is a shortcut, more or less.
Theoretically, but I was just reading something about wormholes last month where scientists are now saying wormholes are essentially like... Wormholes are very similar to black holes in the sense that they're not sure you actually will make it through in one tact, in one piece.
It's not so much that it'll shred you to bits, layman's terms, like with a black hole would, where it would, pick you apart molecule by molecule. It's literally like walking through a doorway. You've played Portal, right? Portal is the definition of how that theory would work out. You would place a portal in one area, you'd have a portal in another area, you walk through one, you pop out the other. Only with wormholes, it's across millions and trillions of light years.
So, generally, it's impossible to even go to the speed of light because you would need, at first, an infinite amount of energy in the process, and your mass would become infinite, and that's impossible. So you can't have infinite mass and an infinite energy because energy is finite, and so the thing why light can speed, why light can travel, in the light speed, is because the photons light are more or less made of travels at the light of speed because because light particles do not have mass.
Yeah, photons are pure energy.
Yeah.
But if you look in situations such as black holes, you can actually see light being pulled into a black hole. So obviously it can be affected.
Light can actually be slowed down, and we have actually slowed down photons in laboratories here on Earth. And the light, what is the term? Fractalizes?
It bends and stuff.
It basically, they take, they basically, what the, one of you two very scientifically minded people, correct me if I'm wrong here, please. What they did was they took a section, they just made a really cold area, like approaching absolute zero. So they...
Kelvin, zero Kelvin.
So they took a film and got it as close to absolute zero as possible and passed light through it, and they were able to observe the light fractalizing and breaking up before shooting out the other side of this film, where it actually just kind of reinstated itself and just resumed being a photon, I guess.
I'm not a physicist, so I don't really know how this all works, but the thing is, the speed of light is the speed of light in a vacuum?
Yes.
Vacuum.
And so even everything can slow light down, even air. And all this theory, why we can't travel faster than light, is actually what is perfectly, it is explained and stated by the relativity theory of Einstein, actually. So you can't, without setting energy and mass to infinite, you can't reach the speed of light with things that actually have mass. So it's impossible.
I propose we make Storm watch Interstellar, because that movie actually does a really good job of summarizing space-time and wormholes and everything like that. It does generalizing the knowledge up until about the point where it gets to string theory, and then it just gets kind of dumb. But then it redeems itself.
I've seen that movie, and the ending is very weird.
Yeah, the point where he's, affecting the world through strings. He's, yeah, that's where it gets a little bit like, no, stop, you're going a little too far. But everything up until that point was pretty good description, including the wormhole that spontaneously popped up near, what was it, Saturn's rings that they were able to travel through?
Yeah, that was Saturn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The interesting thing, I think, about this entire situation is light does have a speed to it. And while, yes, with our current technology and based on the theories we have, it would be near impossible, if not impossible, to get to that speed. But with the way things are going, especially once we get into space where you have, if I understand correctly, very little to no resistance, you should be able to get there one day. I believe we will. I really do. Plus, have you guys been paying attention to this antimatter thing that they're making right now?
I heard the only thing I know about antimatter is that the theoretically price of 1 gram of antimatter would be, I think, 80 billions.
and that the biggest collider or colander, I believe they call it a collider.
The Hadron Collider?
Yes. It takes an enormous amount of energy, and it has to run for a long time to make one tiny little bit of antimatter. But they have made little bits, and they said a spoonful of this stuff apparently is powerful enough to blow up the planet.
That'd be very generalized, but yeah, technically. So with that, they've been able to produce, I don't know what the technical term is for it, but honestly, like molecule amounts of antimatter at an even point, and they just kind of exist and then they stop existing as almost as quick as they come into existence. So it's very difficult to actually capture the process of creating the antimatter, but there's no way we can actually keep it in what we have now. There's no way we can maintain it.
Yeah. And the more unstable compound or an element is or whatever, the more unstable it is, the more powerful it will anti-react. You know what I mean? It will decay powerful because it just say, no, I don't want to exist, and bam!
Yeah, pretty much. Storm's description very much so reminds me of Red Matter from the Star Trek movie.
Red Matter.
Never was in Star Trek.
Literally a drop of red matter and the entire planet got sucked into itself.
Yeah. That's literally actually what the movie showed.
That's actually, I forgot how it's called, but just one of the theories what antimatter does, I think it was antimatter, is that it takes other particles and makes it antimatter itself, and this there would happening a chain reaction that would suck in the whole universe. That was one of the doomsday theories
right
for this experiment.
Right. Doomsday theories are fun.
Well, a loss something that actually might happen in the near future scientifically has to do with nuclear energy. Right now we're using still a not very efficient way to generate nuclear power. But if they ever get, I believe, nuclear fusion is what
fission.
Fission. Yeah, fission.
Fission. Fission is what we're using now. Nuclear fusion is what you're... Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Fission is what we use now. Fusion is where we're going. Because if we accomplish nuclear fusion, it's so much more efficient that we practically can have an unlimited amount of power with next to no waste product compared to now fission. Fission literally does just nuclear waste, and because they can only use the rods or some case pellets for so long before they stop producing enough reaction to warrant keeping them in use in the plant. But fusion is supposed to be the power of the future.
To our listeners, just so we're all on the same level here, fission is the act of splitting the molecules apart, where fusion would be combining the two molecules, right?
Correct. Yeah. Okay. And no matter which one we're doing, the goal is the same. It's to during the process of the reaction, you warm up water.
You capture the energy of the process itself.
Right, which is turned into steam, which turns a turbine, and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, grandma's coffee maker works. That's the whole pot. that's how it works. And it's funny, it doesn't even matter if it's nuclear, it doesn't matter if it's coal, natural gas, it always involves warming water up to the steam.
Yeah, it's a basic reactor.
Yeah.
So I think that that will actually happen in the near future from what I'm reading. And if that does happen, there's your ticket to potential, potentially unlimited safe energy. But
I think we should go to our listener questions. But before that, I wanted to ask you, all three of you, would you rather sing every word you speak, or would you rather only speaking in rhymes?
Are you kidding me? I'd love to speak only in rhymes. That's like my life goal. The hell kind of question is that? Like, oh, I'm just going to spew out everything I say all the time, or I can be really awesome and never stop rhyming? Dude, that's... People make money making words rhyme together. They make lots of money just making words rhyme. I could be a millionaire overnight if I could just only rhyme.
But even if you go to job interviews and stuff, you would only rhyme.
I wouldn't need a job interview. I would be the most famous rapper, musician, singer, whatever in the world.
Okay,
because
so you
I'd
mean
never
core,
stop.
Core. So you'd be like, you're in the emergency room because you broke a wing, and the doctor asks you what's wrong, and instead of answering him like a normal, respectable bird, you have to rap about everything.
Yes, so I would have to rap. I would basically have to rap about, you know, what happened, how I damaged myself, and then I'd also have to also rap that no, I don't have a mental condition. That's how I function in life, is rapping. So you don't need to worry about head and cranial damage. Just pay attention to the wing. That's cool.
I think I would rather rhyme too, because only singing would be somehow... then my life would turn into a musical.
Fleeks, you and I could start our own band at that point.
Okay, I take the singing, you take the rhyming. What about you, Storm and Thane?
I would have to rap, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Rhyme.
It sounds cool.
Yeah. It does, you know, and it fits my, it fits my bird very well.
So, Felix, you've probably played Banjo-Kazooie, right? So it kind of reminds me of how Gruntilda talks all the time.
Yes!
And that's how I imagine it. Like, all the time. Never stop rhyming. It's perfect. I would gladly do that.
So amazing. What we just established here today is we're now a bird boy band. This is no longer a podcast.
That's right.
Myself, Storm, Fleeks, and now you too, Zane. You are part of this boy band. This boy bird band. Bird boy band?
Oh, how's it called? The Chirpies?
The Chirpies. With two E's.
Oh my God, that's such a 50s name. Oh my God.
It's retro. It's throwback. I like it.
We could make rap metal and call us the Birdinators or the Cloaca Grinders.
We could
like Cloaca Grinders.
Oh my God!
Wow, this
no, that's our basis. Stage name. That's our stage name
well,
at night.
We would that would be the avian equivalent of Scissor Sisters, Cloaca Grinders.
Well,
I'm not wrong.
Porn grind band then.
You're right, which makes it even more awful, because that's just, my God, the mental image of a bunch of, you know, lesbian, you know, 80-year-old grandma birds scissoring each other just popped in my brain.
That dude, like, Scissor Sisters is a band. They're a good band. They're one of my favorites.
Okay. You all ready for some questions here from our listeners?
Let's do it.
Yeah, do
all
it.
All right. First question comes from Lord Feedy, and the question is this. What would be challenges for the Bird Olympic Games of 2018? Try and state four.
Flapping. Excessive flapping.
Yeah.
Flaps per minute.
Who can prane the fastest? The loudest squawk.
Curling.
Curling?
I mean, it could also involve some sort of wing-assisted incline running. So, like, we have like, different angles of trees, or like sort of contraptions where you could climb, and they get progressively steeper, and the ones with the best adaptation for cursorial locomotion would be like the winner. And it's like, it's kind of like running, but instead of going forward, you go up.
Oh. I would also say, you know, the traditionals, like who can fly the farthest.
Yeah, and yeah, but,
so long distance flying, and then diving would actually be really good for like a competition between kestrels and
peregrine, I think.
Peregrine, yes. Yeah. So like peregrines versus the kestrels, that would be awesome.
Well, what are also, the kingfishers? They dive the best.
And that, but that would be more of like a stylized diving versus speed, wouldn't it?
Synchronized diving.
Ooh. Synchronized diving.
Also, flying weightlifting.
Birds just suck at weightlifting in general.
Yeah, but the raptor bird.
I don't know. Have you seen
can
me?
Do it pretty well.
Hmm? Well, that would be like ground based then. Oh, just ground.
I don't know. I'm a pretty muscular bird. I think I'm good. I can lift up core, no problems.
We'd have to How do the about... Griffin Olympics because that would be a whole different subset species.
That's true. Griffins would have to be in their own class because we would pose a unique challenge to regular birds. Also, hey, we could say it's the Griffin Olympics. What the hell?
Griffin Olympics. Okay, let's call it the Griffin Olympics. Also, a thing would be fly fishing for bald eagles. So they don't actually fish, but they pretend to fish.
And, you know, whoever doesn't drown wins.
Now, see, that's something...
Fly fishing.
That's something a griffin and a bird could compete against, too. Is that because fishing. Yeah. That, see, there's some things that could work, I suppose.
I mean, we established in the past. I absolutely adore the bald eagle. You know, amazing icon for our country, but they're stupid as hell, and they mostly die from drowning because they grab fish that are too big for them to pull out of the water. That is the number one thing that kills bald eagles, not humans, their own stupidity.
But now the golden eagle, well, that's a little more smart.
That's a big bird, yeah. Okay, next question.
We actually have one final question.
Okay.
And the question is sciency. How big do the wings of a bird have to be in relation to how long its body is? What is the ratio?
It's not the body length, it's more the mass. Let's look at the biggest bird still capable of flying. That's a Kauri bustard. And it's estimated to be around 10 to 20 kilograms and a wingspan of, I think, 2 to 2.8 meters. They're like the biggest still capable flying birds. And then if you look at the biggest flying animal, which I think would be the Quetzalcoatlus, which is estimated to be around 80 to, I think, 200. No, the most recent estimate is about 200 kilograms. I might be wrong. They have a wingspan of 10 to 11 meters, which I have no idea what it is in freedom units. So someone has to do the conversion for me.
That's okay.
Freedom units?
But, freedom units.
Oh, God. Okay.
So it depends mostly on your like mass, I suppose.
So there's no straight formula for like, I'm sorry, I'm an American, so I use an imperial system here. Yeah. For every pound of weight, you got to have, 3 foot of wing. There's nothing like that.
It all comes down to how much thrust that wing can produce in undertow.
Yeah, because then you have also to get into account, is it like powered takeoff, or is it like more like gliding from a elevated structure?
Oh, that's a very good point. Plus
for powered takeoff, you need a lot more energy and a lot different musculature in order to even attempt like a takeoff. Because some pterosaurs were terrible at just jumping off and getting into the air. It drove they had a lot of issues with, when the ground isn't when you have soft mud or whatever, they would not be able to take off. Some birds have the same issues, so it's in some birds actually, or at least in the history, some birds were adapted at only being gliders, so they need a lot less, you know, like musculature and smaller wings in order to have a flight. So that depends as well, I guess. I don't know. Okay. I think it was like four legs. You might have a better idea. Like a, I don't know how
it,
that.
It
would
all comes down
to
like the efficiency of the matter, because like so. It's actually one thing to take into consideration. Yeah, like the bigger your wings are, the more muscular that bird needs to be in order to even flap those wings in order to get the be able to take off and sustain flight. An engineer will tell you that you can strap a rocket to a brick and it'll fly, but it comes down to, you know, how efficient can you make it so that, you know, it'll fly longer or faster or farther.
Well, that's essentially what the space shuttle was it was a falling, flying brick, but yeah.
Well, I mean, airplanes are pretty much the same. They're just really efficient at falling in an upwards direction.
Yep. Yep. And then we have an explosion that causes the jet to turn, and there you go. The engine to turn, I should say, and there you go.
I think we are far in now, and I would like to end it with the last question from Sable. And he asked, what's followed by 16 sodium atoms?
Oh, my God. Let me tell you, I played a lot of For Honor the past few days, and that was a lot of sodium.
I've got no idea, because I never took chemistry. I took physics.
Actually, that's a joke question. Think about the symbol of sodium.
If it's from Sable, it's going to be a joke. I know that.
Yeah, it's a joke. And just think the answer. I give you the answer because I know the joke. But think about the symbol for sodium. It's Na. And now say it 16 times.
Batman.
Batman.
Sable just won some favor points with me. That's awesome. Thank you for that.
That was a cute.
Talk about anything Batman and you win. You just win, okay? With me, Batman, you win. End of story. Unless it's Suicide Squad. We don't talk about Suicide Squad.
Yeah, Suicide Squad wasn't that good.
All right, you guys ready to wrap it up?
Yeah, that was to wrap it up.
Zane, yes. Thank you so much for joining us. Dude, it was awesome having you on the show.
thank you for having me. Can I have the closing remarks?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you can have closing remarks.
It's kind of a question, but I follow it with the answer. So it's kind of scientific as well. So if a Norwegian or Swede ornithologist analyzes a bird, is that process called a Scandinavian? I had to do it. I'm sorry.
It's so painful.
If it caused physical pain, then that was the right amount of pun.
This is how you give me cancer.
And that's how you wrap up this show.
Indeed. The best for last.
And this concludes our episode of Bird Psychology Today.
Thank you so much for joining us. You can catch us on Google, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. Thank you. Good night. Don't forget to kiss the bird.
Kiss the bird. Good luck.
And always be beeping.
Always be beeping. Always be beeping.
I've got a game for you guys.
Oh, yay! I my body is ready.
Your body.
Okay. Your body's ready.
My body's ready.
Of the two things that need to be ready, your body being ready is not the most important. Say Irish wrist watch as fast as you possibly can.
Irish wrist watch.
Irish wrist watch. Ah, fuck.
Irish wrist. I can't do that.
I was
Irish,
even doing mouth flexing.
Irish. I can't even say it slow. Irish wrist. I can't do it.
Irish wrist watch. Irish wrist watch.
So the trick here is to ignore the first W. So it's Irish wrist. So
Irish wrist. So
just ignore
watch.
The W.
Oh, Irish
yeah,
wrist.
See,
watch.
It's much easier that okay. time.
Booyah!
Irish wrist watch.
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 I sound drunk.
Irish wrist watch.
Irish wrist watch.